120 WGN. Hey, it's Amy Huth in for Steve Bertrand today. Lots to do on the Wintrust Business Lunch, so let's get right to it. Lots of people are talking about the new Google Pixel. That's in a lot of headlines right now, and here to talk with us about that is our friend Roger Chang from CNET. Hi, Roger. Welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
So Google Pixel is all over the place. Everywhere we look, people are tweeting about it and talking about it and thinking about it and hypothesizing about it. But tell us what the deal is and why it is so game-changing.
Right. So Pixel is the, I guess it's the first quote-unquote Google phone. Now, Google's partnered with a number of companies in the past to build a line of phones using the Nexus name. But that's always been sort of a cooperative thing. You know, they've always worked with a company like LG or Samsung or Motorola to build these phones. But the Pixel and the Pixel XL, the slightly larger version, this is the first time that they've really taken full control of the development of the phone, from the hardware to the software. Really think about it, it's the same model that Apple has. You know, they kind of develop, design, and build the phone, both hardware and software, and then they go and they contract it out to somebody else to build that phone. Google is essentially doing the exact same thing, and they feel like this is the super phone that that they can truly compete against the likes of iPhone.
And this starts about $650. The XL model is going to be about $780 or so. And so what are the features they're most excited about and touting the most?
Yeah, one of the features they're really proud of is the camera. They spent a lot of time talking about their 12-megapixel camera and the software tricks that they've added to really enhance the capabilities. It takes shots faster, the camera activates a lot quicker, it focuses a lot easier. It's a lot faster and sharper. And at least according to one independent testing firm that right now has the highest score for any camera phone out there. Keep in mind that firm hasn't tested the iPhone 7 Plus yet, so we don't know if it's actually the best out there, but as of right now, it does have fairly high marks for a camera.
Definitely, and it seems like the camera is really an interesting talking point right now around phones, because we saw, you know, a Sundance winner, honoree that was shot entirely on an iPhone. We were seeing so many more things happen in the film world that's really changing the way we think about camera equipment even. And as we step more and more into virtual reality and those kinds of things, it's very, very interesting the value we're suddenly putting on a camera, whereas, just a few years ago, even the idea of having a camera on your phone that even took a remotely quality picture was so
right.
Funny and foreign to people.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, you don't even really necessarily need one of those fancy digital SLR cameras. A lot of the higher-end phones, the cameras are almost as good. I mean, and, you know, it's in your pocket, so it's a lot more convenient to hold. You brought up the idea of virtual reality. I mean, one of the other key features of this phone is it's the first phone that will be able to work with Google's VR headset, Daydream View. Mm-hmm. And VR is sort of a big initiative for Google. Really, it's a big initiative for a lot of tech companies out there right now. And so Google View is sort of Google's attempt to kind of get VR out to the mass market.
Yeah, well, it'll be really interesting to see. So what's the timeline on this this phone actually shipping?
It's available to pre-order now. It should be shipping shortly, actually, later this month. And it's got an exclusive partnership with Verizon, so you can actually go and buy this at Verizon. If you're not a Verizon customer, though, you can actually just buy it on Google's store online directly.
Very, very interesting. Well, the phone wars continue, so we will keep turning to CNET and all of our friends there to keep us updated on the latest. Thanks very much, Roger Chang, for being with us today. WGN. Hey, it's Amy Guth in for Steve Bertrand today here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Thanks for being with us and spending part of your workday with us. My friends, our friend Bill Geiger is here. He's from Geiger Wealth Management, here to answer all of your questions about retirement planning. And so welcome to the program. Always good to see you, Bill.
Nice to be back again.
Well, so let's talk about retirement. I know you specifically really focus on people in their 50s and 60s who are getting close to retirement.
Right.
But I think that you have valuable lessons for lots of people at many, many different ages. So I think one of the biggest questions that when people start thinking about retirement is it seems very difficult to come up with how you come up with a number of how much you really need to retire.
Well, it's not a number that's important. that's kind of a conventional wisdom. What's really important is how much income you can generate in retirement. I know everybody focuses on how much assets they have, but when you retire, all of a sudden you look up and you say, I've got to have income coming in every month. How do I do this? And it's particularly important if you're 5 to 10 years out from retirement to start planning for how you're going to produce that income long before you retire.
And so how can you really do that to make sure that you're kind of planning for inflation and all that kind of stuff?
Well, you sit down and you put a plan together. And it's not just a matter of going to a website by somebody and crunching some numbers. It's actually thinking through, what am I going to need when I retire? What's my lifestyle cost? How can I convert the assets that I have, a portion of it in any case, into income? And that's where retirement planning comes in, particularly retirement income planning.
Yeah. And what about like protecting yourself? You know, we hear about scary things in the market, and I think people kind of want to panic and react and change course to that. But how do you protect yourself from things like that?
You know, that's a particular concern recently. I can't tell you how many couples have come into the office and they're really worried about the upcoming election relative to the retirement portfolio. And the closer we get to the election, the more stressed people are. It's and again, it's coming back to sitting down, looking at what you need to do, putting a plan together, and so on.
Sure, sure. I even saw that one of the big jewelry chains was even talking about how no one's making decisions on engagement rings right now, pending the election. Nobody knows what the future holds, so no one's making those decisions, those big life decisions. I think that it applies to marriage and engagement as much as like retirement planning. And so what about things that you can do? You know, we're specifically talking about people within, 10, 15 years of retirement.
Right.
But what are some kind of basic things that apply to anybody at any age that maybe even people that have just entered the workforce should be thinking of now?
You know, they should be saving. But crunch time comes 5 to 10 years for retirement. That's when you really need to start getting serious. You need to get serious about, how am I going to convert assets into income? How much is my lifestyle going to cost me? Can I continue to have my lifestyle? That's a big concern in retirement. And 5 to 10 years out is where you really need to begin focusing on it.
Sure.
You know, I was just mentioning that people are very worried about the upcoming election relative to the retirement portfolio. Suzanne, we're going to do something a little bit special today. I know people are concerned about this. For the next 5 callers who call in, I know you're going to talk about this in a moment. For the next 5 callers who call in who have at least $500,000 in their portfolio, I'm going to sit down with them personally and help them put together a full-blown retirement plan. That includes a retirement income plan and how to protect your portfolio against the election or whatever's coming up.
Or all those things, right? Because
yeah.
I think the big thing everyone's always worried about is like, how do I make sure I don't run out of money?
Exactly.
People are living so much longer now. People are outliving their money.
People are living longer. There's inflation for that many more years. And planning is really important.
Yeah. What's the biggest thing to think about when you're really thinking through that and making sure you don't run out of money? What's the one thing to keep in mind the most?
The one thing you have to keep in mind the most, and we keep coming back to this, is having sustainable income to go through your retirement. You think about it, when you retire, for the vast majority of people, Social Security is not nearly enough to continue their lifestyle the way they have it. So the amount of sustainable income, dependable, sustainable income that's coming into your checking account on a monthly basis is critical for not outliving your money.
Yeah, yeah. Well, income, not assets. It sounds like really the takeaway there.
Both important, but the closer you get to retirement, the more important creating income is.
Yes, definitely. All right, well, let's do a little bit of fine print here. If you are nearing retirement, this could be a confusing time. If you're wondering how the election, global events, and the current economy might affect your retirement, well, you're not alone. Bill Geiger of Geiger Wealth Management understands and has a tremendous opportunity for you today. Bill's going to sit down with you personally and do a full-blown retirement analysis, complimentary, for the next 5 callers who have at least $500,000 saved for their retirement. Call 800-681-2498 and Bill can translate the the very complex retirement process into easy to understand steps, including a retirement income plan. Call Geiger Wealth Management right now, 800-681-2498. That's 800-681-2498. One more time, 800-681-2498. Thanks very much, Bill. Great to see you as ever.
Nice to be back.
All right, my friends, let's take a little break and get you news, all that good stuff here in just a bit on 720 WGN. WGN. Hey, it's Amy Guth in for Steve Bertrand today on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Thanks for being with us and sharing part of your Thursday with me. I'm most grateful to you for that. We're joined now by our good friend John Byrne. He's the Chief Marketing Officer at Golden Ratner, and he's here to talk about all things technology with us, and we are mighty glad. Hi, John. How are you today?
Hey, Amy. I'm good. Thanks for having me.
So there's lots to talk about. I don't even know where to start, but I think I want to start with something that we heard a little bit earlier in the show on that market report, and that is Twitter shares are 21% down. Holy moly.
Yeah, so they're trying to get sold, and yeah, this is going the wrong way to get sold.
Oh, yeah, that's the opposite of what
right.
needs to happen to get
right.
sold. So it looks like there's still some interest, though, but some of the biggies have backed out.
Right, Google and Apple have both said thanks, but
nope.
no thanks. And what's interesting is I was reading something this morning that Salesforce had talked about really being interested in it, and Mark Benioff, which is the Salesforce guy, founder, whatever, big cheese, and he really kind of stepped away from how interested Salesforce was this morning. Salesforce, as soon as he said he was interested in Twitter, Salesforce shares dropped like 6 or 7% overnight. So,
well, that'll happen.
And now, but the other potential suitor is Disney.
Yeah.
And which is sort of an interesting play for Disney because, I mean, Disney for a long time has been building itself up as a truly multimedia, multifaceted company from
right.
all based around entertainment, obviously. But it'll be interesting because it, I mean, I not to like brag or whatever, but I think I said on this show by the end of 2016, one of the big social media players was going to, you know, be gone and or just consumed by somebody. And mm-hmm. LinkedIn proved me right, I suppose, but I really was thinking it was Twitter. So,
yeah.
And they want, I was, the other thing I was reading is that Twitter wants to get sold or at least get announced of the sale by the end of the third quarter when it has to reveal its third quarter results, which
mm-hmm.
puts it at like mid-November,
yep.
late November. But I'm thinking those results are not going to look good.
No, I don't think so. I don't
yeah.
think so. Twitter's such an interesting place right now, too,
yes.
just being an election year.
Oh, God.
And, you know, head pontification platform of all right now.
Yeah. Well, and it's really segmenting too because, and I've noticed Facebook has really stepped up. I mean,
yeah.
for better or for worse, they got their algorithm down for the politics. And if you're really interested in commenting live like the debate the other mm-hmm. night or last week and soon to come,
yeah.
it's really the place I think for a lot of people to be exchanging stuff because you can blather more on Facebook than you can on Twitter, obviously.
You have way more than 140 characters
right.
to show why you're the expert on all things political.
And how stupid the other people are too.
Yes.
Yes.
And to totally, you know, destroy family value, you know, not values, but family bonds
oh, yeah.
until after the election.
Yeah, relationships will not be patched up by Thanksgiving for sure.
No, this is going to be a really awkward Thanksgiving this year,
exactly.
I think, for a lot of families.
Oh,
indeed.
Yeah.
Well, I want to also talk about all those chat apps. I mean, I think it's really interesting. We mostly talk about Snapchat and Facebook Messenger, even Slack, the corporate
yep.
version of that. And I put like WhatsApp in there too.
Oh, yeah.
You know, all those, we mostly talk about them with a generational layer on them. We rarely are just talking about them for talking about them, except when Snapchat launched that Discover area where it had brands when, you know, like content was specifically available only on Snapchat. Suddenly we talked about it outside of a generational way. But for the most part, we talk about it with this thing about like a millennial user or a Generation Z, even younger than millennials. We talk about it with that usership in mind.
Right, because they have, as a generation, to talk broadly, they have rejected sort of the standard advertising models that have been with us for a lot of generations, frankly. And, you know, Mary Meeker's report was yet another thing back in May. We talked about it. You know, the digital advertising field, sphere, whatever you want to call it, sector, is way underpaid. I mean, there's so much opportunity out there. The problem is that brands and their advertising companies and agencies can't figure out how to break in. And
mm-hmm.
some of it is related to technology. Some of it's related to how people use the technology. And I think that's the thing about chat is that it's very much private. And so a couple articles I was reading and talking about is how does an advertiser break into a private conversation without it being obnoxious and or creepy.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, right. And here's a word from, you know, whatever sponsor. It's right. Like, wait.
Before I answer your question,
right.
Let's hear from this sponsor.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I thought it was really interesting. We heard about this a little bit in the Olympics because we were talking about how there's that kind of like a period of time during which Olympians can't talk about certain products that they endorse the rest of the year.
Right.
And so underneath that rule, it was kind of the night before a lot of them went to Snapchat. And we're like, okay, guys, I can't talk about this brand of sweatshirt for a couple weeks, but here's the thing. I'm going to be wearing, you know. And they were kind of making these like these final disclosures. And I think the Williams sisters particularly were really heavily, you know, involved on Snapchat that day, really like thanking a lot of their sponsors. Like, I know I can't talk about you for weeks, but yeah, I love you. Thanks. Bye. And there was talk about how there's, you know, there were people employed by the Olympics to watch all of these brand accounts to make sure, because they were under this rule from the Olympic Committee. There was even a brand retweet constituted a breach of contract.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't realize that.
Like, if I have endorsed,
makes sense.
Right. If I have endorsed this athlete for 10 years and they're killing it at the Olympics and I retweet the Olympics account, I've screwed up. I'm in trouble. So, you know, imagine that room. You're watching millions of tweets go by to make sure that no brand is doing it. But Snapchat, it's very hard to police because it's very, you know, it's that one-to-one.
And you can create communities that no one can get into unless the user-defined community allows them in. I mean, in some ways, it's almost like Reddit, but Reddit is a whole different
whole other thing,
which we don't need to get into. But I mean, the idea, these private groups, these private messages, the interesting thing is that it says private, but here's the other thing, and now I work for lawyers, and one was a long time ago. It sort of tweaks the interest of, they're not really private, and that's where the advertisers were going to start to get in.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
And
it's not private in the sense that, like, you're in a soundproof room.
Right.
You just, like, step to the side of the party.
Exactly.
Like,
and
people can see you talking.
And or potentially overhear you.
Right.
And, I mean, you're using somebody else's platform, so you've already agreed to terms of service and all that stuff, which basically says, we can watch everything you do and use that to basically decide how to pitch you on something.
Yeah. And what I think is interesting too about Snapchat in particular is it started with a very different vibe.
Yep.
You know, when it first started, it was really about hookup culture.
Yeah.
And when it was about naked people.
Well, it was about Anthony Weiner and all of his issues, so to speak.
Right. And it's shifted, and now we have publications that are putting Snapchat specific content on there and things like that, where, you know, there's even sort of a like a lifestyle magazine, like a very Martha Stewart vibe kind of magazine specifically on Snapchat, and that's the only place you can get it. And Cosmo has been, you know, one of the big, you know, brands represented there, and MTV is very big there.
Everybody who's chasing that 18 to 24 demographic.
Yeah, it's really interesting. So Harvard Business Review had a really interesting piece about what marketers need to know about chat apps that I thought was really interesting. And I think, I mean, there's a lot of people kind of hypothesizing about that, but at the end of the day, no one's really cracked it yet.
Right, and the scary thing for marketers is that the growth in the chat app is just huge. There's more check-ins now every day on Snapchat than there are on Facebook. Mm-hmm. And Facebook has 1.5 billion users, but now Snapchat is up to 900 million, I think. I may be wrong about that, but it's pretty close to 1 billion users. It's crazy.
Not too shabby right there.
Especially.
And so what do you think the future of that is? What's the next beat of these kind of apps? Because it seems like there's, you know, I keep thinking like Alexa and those kind of things have a voice in there somewhere where it's like you're talking, but you're not really talking with the person.
Well, the interesting thing, I mean, for advertisers is that it's all about automation.
Yeah.
And so are we going to suddenly get these automated marketing individual pitches? I mean, you see sci-fi movies that talk about how you walk past billboards and it's advertising just to you. I mean, that's been lots of sites.
Sure.
I think maybe that is not exactly our future, but it's getting pretty close to the idea of you're going to, and they tried to do it already, but it's terrible, right?
Yeah.
You know, you go and you buy something and then you get pitched to buy the same thing over and you're like, no, too late. Sorry.
Yeah, I already got it.
Right.
We're good.
But now they're going to get to a point where they're going to almost like predict your behavior and make you want to buy that pair of pants or pair of shoes before you even realize, oh, you know, I want to buy a pair of shoes.
Yeah. Well, you know, Amazon's playing in that space a lot, right? With like the detergent bottle that monitors how much detergent is in there and how often you use it. So it knows exactly when to drop ship more of it to you, which is okay. I admit that part would be handy. Maybe there's something on the inside of the toilet paper roll that tells you when you need more, you know, and just ships it to your
clothes,
house.
You know, you could put something in, I imagine, that tells me how many times you've taken it to the dry cleaner or put it in the washing machine or dryer.
Right.
And it'll say, well, you know, it's been a couple hundred times you've washed that pair of underwear, maybe it's time for a new pair.
It's time. We took the liberty of ordering
right, exactly.
more for you. There, we, our sensors revealed there's holes in that underwear.
Right,
we
ordered more for you. And your grandmother would be ashamed of you.
You can't leave the house with those,
exactly.
don't you know? Right. Well, I think that's interesting. And I think a lot about, you know, we're just stepping into that space with like the Alexa and Siri and mm-hmm. all that, and where that is going to intersect with all of this.
Well, and when they can be truly responsive as opposed to just kind of, you know, you can trick them to say funny things or
right.
they, you know, they respond to you, but it's a question answer as opposed to a conversation.
Yeah. I mean, I've played around with Alexa a little bit. I think it's interesting. I mean, I think in Siri, it's more like about, it's about like tricks and Easter eggs that are in there.
Yes.
There's certain things,
right.
you know, you can ask Siri and it'll be a very funny answer. With Alexa, there's some that are actually kind of funny. Like I was reading about, if you tell it good night, it'll say in a very heartfelt way, like, good night, have a very nice sleep, or whatever,
right,
you know.
Right. Well, if you've watched the show Mr. Robot, she was basically a supporting actress,
right.
so to speak, in a couple of those episodes.
Oh, man, if Alexa wins an Emmy before I do, I'm going to be so mad.
It's kind of an interesting concept.
But she probably will.
There you go.
Darn it. All right. My friends, we are talking with John Byrne. Always a pleasure. Thanks so much for chatting with us.
Thanks for having me.
All right. We're going to take a little break. Be back in just a bit on the Wintrust Business Lunch, 720 WGN. WGN. Hey, it's Amy Guth in for Steve Bertrand today here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Thanks for being with us on this drizzly, rainy day. Appreciate you sharing part of your work day with me. Hope you're staying warm and dry, whatever you're doing. Still lots to do and lots to talk about. We are joined now by Andrew Ochoa from Waverly Labs. And Andrew, welcome to the program. I feel like I want to start here with like a slow clap because I'm looking at your Indiegogo page that you did. I have been through a crowdfunding campaign myself and I thought I was, doing pretty well to finish out at 128%, but you finished your crowdfunding on Indiegogo at 3,177% of your goal. That is amazing. Congratulations to you.
Thanks. Yeah, pop the bottles.
Oh, my gosh. Truly, truly. Well, so tell us about Waverly Labs and what you're doing, because I think this is a really, really fascinating project that you're working on.
Yeah, thanks. Well, Waverly Labs as a company is that we think of ourselves as an innovative product, innovative technology company. But what we're working on now is what we call the pilot. It's a translation system. The idea here is the pilot includes two earpieces and an accompanying app. What's happening is we're sending the languages which you and I are speaking through the app, and the pilot earpieces translate for us. So we're working on the world's first smart earpiece language translator.
So essentially, if I'm using this product, the pilot, if I have it in my ear and I have my app in use, I can, and someone is speaking another language to me that I don't understand, in theory, it is being translated into English into my ear.
Exactly.
That is very cool, and I feel like that's very game-changing in the world of travel and international business and lots of things. And so talk us through how you came to this idea.
Yeah, it's kind of a funny story. I mean, 2.5 years ago, one of our original co-founders and myself were working on the idea of a smart earpiece. But even back then, we really wanted to solve a global challenge with the earpiece itself. And, you know, we were a small team then. But we were diverse, came from different backgrounds, we spoke different languages, and that's kind of how we realized that language barriers itself would be the greatest challenge we could try to solve.
That is such an interesting idea. So it does not work on every language so far. So initially it will work with the Latin, the Romance languages, so English, Spanish, French, Italian, but then you'll be rolling out other languages.
Yeah, correct. So right now we're focused on the main Latin languages. As you said, French, Italian, Portuguese, Spanish, along with English. But we're taking a lot of feedback from people who are pre-ordering from our community to start to research which languages we want to start working on and deploying as of, you know, next year.
That's so interesting. And there's a note here that as I'm looking over, you know, the web presence that you have, a note there that'll kind of translate for dialect, which I think is really interesting because as we know in our own language, it's very different if you take someone who was raised in New York City versus someone raised in Alabama. You're going to get two very vastly different versions of English right there.
Yeah, that's a good example. A better example would be something like Portuguese from Portuguese versus Brazilian Portuguese.
Sure.
Or Latin American Spanish from Europe. So those, you do take those different kinds of dialects, or even really almost different kinds of Spanish or different kinds of Portuguese into effect during the translation.
Right. And so what is the physical part work? So you have two earpieces. So I have one, you have the other, or you're speaking into the app and then I can hear it through my earpiece?
No, like you said the first time. So two earpieces, I'm wearing one, you're wearing another, you're wearing the other. I'm speaking Spanish, you're speaking English. And the app is just facilitating the translation, but the earpieces themselves are just allowing you and I to speak back and forth. We're not speaking directly into the app. We're not holding our phones up to our face.
Okay. So we're using our earpieces and having a conversation and off we go. That's so interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, gosh, I think that just, I'm just imagining all the scenarios that would change in travel and, in business and so many things. I think that would be, so helpful. So what is the timeline now that you have, all this remarkable funding from Indiegogo and all of this wonderful interest that it's got to be so validating? What is the timeline now for this to reach market?
Yeah, you know, it really is validating to touch on that subject, travel, international business. What's really interesting is when people, like when family emails us and they say, this is going to help me speak to my spouse's in-laws.
Yeah.
I didn't speak to before because they speak a different language. So it's very encouraging. In terms of our timeline, we're releasing an early version of the app next month. We're going to go into beta testing this winter, and we expect the pilot earpieces themselves to be released next May, delivered next May.
That's so cool. I wish you all the luck in the world. I'm happy to be one of your beta testers because I think this is a really fun idea and it's going to be very cool to see it in the market. Well, Andrew Ochoa, thanks so much for joining us today, everybody. Keep an eye out for this product called the Pilot from Waverly Labs. Did a remarkable job on Indiegogo and it is hitting the market really, really soon and will certainly change the way we talk with people around the world. Thanks very much, Andrew.
Thanks, Amy.
All right, my friends, we're going to take a little break and get you to news and then turn things back over to Bill and Wendy here in just a bit on 720 WGN.